My guest today is Alex Vines. Alex is head of the Africa program at Chatham House, which is the Royal Institute of International Affairs in Britain. He's an author and one of the leading experts and commentators on Africa. He's close to many leaders across Africa, and many of these regularly speak at Chatham House. Alex now joins me from London. Alex, it's great to have you with me.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a great pleasure. So Chatham House marks its centenary this year, and I remember well celebrating with you and your team at a great Bonhams Art Exhibition for Modern African Art in January. What an extraordinary year this is turning out to be. In Chatham House's 100-year history, what do you think it most compares with?
Probably the end of the Great War. So Chatham House was created as a response to the First World War. And then, obviously, the Second World War. Chatham House was nationalised as part of the British war effort for the Second World War and then reprivatised after the end of the war. I think those are the two moments in Chatham House's history that are most similar to what we're going through now.
So given that massive experience, I mean, how have your plans and perspectives at Chatham House Africa programme changed since the global pandemic? And what are your focuses?
Well, we're focusing on geopolitics and the responses to COVID-19. So obviously, like everybody else, we've become virtual. So we're working out how technology and communicating with people works. And we're looking at the rivalries and the areas of cooperation. Are nation states emerging again? How are populist leaders responding? Is democracy more able to cope with COVID-19 and its challenges than authoritarian countries? Those are sorts of big issues that we're looking at.
I heard a webinar the other day from Nouriel Roubini, who's the professor of economics at Stern School, also known, I believe, as Dr. Doom. He was predicting what he called a trifecta of unsuppressed pandemic, insufficient economic policy reaction, and massive geopolitical friction leading to depression and civil unrest across the globe. How do you see that in the context of Africa? Do you think that's a reasonable response, or are you more optimistic?
I'm more optimistic. I think the main point is that we don't really have quality information. We don't fully understand at all how Africa is going to respond to COVID-19. There is absolutely pervasive underreporting and under testing of COVID-19 across the African continent, so all 54, 55 countries. And we just know that we don't know a lot at the moment. So how the medical side of this pandemic plays out, we're very unclear. What we are clear about is the economic impact. It's going to significantly hit the continent. Every country is going to be impacted to the point now that this is going to be the first recession across the whole of Africa for 25 years. Some of the more pessimistic assessments see a decline to minus 5.1% of GDP across the continent in many countries. So that's very serious, and that's going to become worse in 2020. And I would expect it to be still really alarming in 2021. So a rebounding continent, maybe we can only start modeling for 2022.
You speak to many African leaders. Are you optimistic that they feel that they've got the strategies in place to deal with that? And where do you see the most hope?
Well, you and I have just been chatting a little bit about South Africa. I do think that President Ramaphosa and the South Africans have been responding extremely well to this crisis. And the popularity ratings of Mr. Ramaphosa is up. I was reading a Standard Bank assessment today that this might be the perfect moment to put through some other reforms that are needed, that there's a real opportunity here for fiscal and economic reform, that this crisis provides some opportunity. So there are clearly governments like the South African one that are responding well to this. There are others that are very ill-equipped. My sense is that advantage South Africa has is it does have stronger institutions. It has better health systems than many other African countries. So South Africa is likely to respond better to this crisis than a country like Niger, for example.
Indeed. And I guess you could say that Africa has dealt with pandemics before. And in South Africa, for example, with the AIDS and TB and with Ebola elsewhere. Do you think it's appropriate to say that there may be a way that they could handle this better than others?
I think so. I mean, again, on the medical side, there is a concern that, you know, TB and HIV and therefore very low immunity levels amongst significant parts of the populations, particularly in southern Africa, might make them more vulnerable to COVID-19. The other balance to it is that the median age across Africa is under 20 years old. And it's clear from the data in Asia and now in Europe and in North America that the people most hit are those particularly over 70 and particularly over 80. And so this is an older person's pandemic, and I think that gives Africa advantage too.
I read the African Union's paper on the pandemic, which said that COVID-19 comes at a point when some of the regions are already facing the daunting challenges of fragility, conflict and violence due to either terrorism's political instability and or climate change. This is the sort of thing you look at all the time. Do you see this as a chance for conflict to worsen, or do you take the African Union's view that it's a chance for people to try and prevent conflict?
I think that will depend on the conflict and the location. This is the year of silencing the guns, is the title of the year for the African Union. Unfortunately, I think in places like the Sahel, we're going to see continued insecurity. And I've been busy over the last few weeks focusing on northern Mozambique. And I do think that at the time that the Mozambican government has declared a state of emergency in response to COVID-19, dealing with a growing insurgency with a jihadist link to it is something that a government that's already finding multiple tasking challenging makes it all the more difficult. Bear in mind that Mozambique also got hammered by two cyclones last year, Idai and Kenneth. So this is a really difficult time for a country like Mozambique. And COVID-19 doesn't come at a time, I think, that will enhance the opportunity to negotiate with a growing Islamic-linked insurgency.
And how important do you think Tanzania is to that?
Good question. I think Tanzania sometimes feels a little bit like America, Tanzania first, and doesn't really consider the implications of its neighbors. Just like the United States is less preoccupied with what happens in Canada or in Mexico, I think Tanzania has the same sort of attitude to its neighbors. So the Magufuli administration is itself combating now and focused on COVID-19. It's also planning for presidential elections this year. So Mr. Magufuli is looking for a second term. So that will be its priority, not regional politics with its neighbours.
Do you think that will impact the work done with the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement and all the calls from the African Union and the multilaterals to work together and improve intra-Africa trade? Do you think that's going to go backwards, or do you think that will be pushed forward in the way many people hoped towards the end of last year it would be?
I think some of the Pan-African ambitions will be delayed. I can't see this moving forward. Even the responses of African countries to COVID-19. So 16 African states have imposed national lockdowns and 6 have done it to their major urban centers. So South Africa can do that. Mozambique can't, because the informal market is the safety net. That's how people survive. They have to trade, otherwise they starve. So Mozambique can't ever do a total lockdown. So you're going to have different responses. And some states are more effective at this than others. So rather authoritarian measures have been implemented by Rwanda. You can assume that's the same case in Eritrea, whereas a chaotic country like Nigeria would be very difficult to ensure that would happen in that way.
Yes, and I think the majority of business across Africa is done by the informal sector. So what you've just said has to be absolutely true.
If you're working in the informal sector and you're poor, you're going to be more exposed to COVID-19. The African elites will go behind their large walls or into their apartments and can be more protected. But those living in peri-urban areas and living out on the informal market are going to be very exposed.
So you don't share the view of some that this is a great leveler?
No, because if I know many kind of middle-class African friends and elites are able to hide in their big gardens and protect themselves in a way that others can't. So I don't see it as leveling in that way.
The African Union is now again saying it's, and you've heard this a number of years from others, calling for a paradigm shift in terms of how people deal with Africa. And one of those areas I think you picked up earlier is moving the supply chain and the focus of production into Africa and not relying so much on China, both for Africa itself and for their prospects of exporting elsewhere. Do you think this can be delivered?
Well, I do think everywhere will reconsider how their supply chains are developed. And clearly, one of the good things about the Continental Free Trade Area idea is to get Africa trading more internally, because, and I think it's based on good analysis, you're not going to get the growth that the continent needs from foreign direct investment, not enough of it. So internal growth and regional growth is the pathway forward to get the growth to lift people out of poverty. And so I do think that COVID will provide an opportunity to think through African responses and regional responses. There is an opportunity here, like is being considered elsewhere in the world.
Chatham House is based in the UK, and I know you've done personally a lot of work on the evolution of the UK policy in sub-Saharan Africa. Where do you see the UK now, post-UK Africa Investment Summit and having to focus on its own COVID problems?
Well, in the short term, the UK is just focused on itself and how to get through this COVID crisis. It could be that Britain becomes the most affected country in Europe. I mean, that's a plausible scenario now, that we'll have higher levels of mortality even than Italy or Spain. We'll know in a few weeks' time whether that's the case. Where I think the UK can certainly assist is the technical know-how, so equipment, ventilators, personal protective equipment, those sorts of things that it's ramping up at the moment that may well be important for Africa and elsewhere. So to provide the patents and share that sort of assistance. UK development money also will play a role, but I think the more important role will be that the UK remains an important trading partner and economic partner of Africa longer term, and African countries can benefit from that when we come out of it. This is now at midterm. I would not expect much UK-Africa diplomacy beyond immediate crisis COVID response in 2020. There are actually a number of British diplomatic missions that are being put into kind of sleep mode because the UK government can't support the small number of British diplomats. So there are some small posts that are in effect being closed at the moment, just being managed by locally engaged staff. That's the sort of situation that we're in. And the Foreign and Commonwealth Office's main focus right at the moment is repatriation of British nationals, including from places like Kenya and South Africa and elsewhere back to the UK. So that's what most of British effort is focused on right now.
But you do not see, I mean, because speaking as I do to others, there remains a clear positive commitment to engaging with Africa and seeing some ways in which the UK government, alongside others, can support sovereign debt and certain other aspects of business in Africa. Do you see that as being possible in the current circumstances, or do you think it's just a bridge too far for people at the moment?
Well, I do still think that the UK, by the end of this year, beginning into 2021, will start to look at reinitiating into some of the commitments that it was following from the investment summit of early this year that happened in London, the UK-Africa Investment Summit. So Africa isn't prime priority right at the moment, but it will become a priority again. I have no doubt about that. The British commitment of reopening embassies, of increasing foreign direct investment, of encouraging British companies to be more involved in Africa remains the case. That hasn't changed. Those embassies are there. Those diplomatic networks are there. I don't see significant cuts planned to those networks.
And we haven't even mentioned Brexit. Do you think Brexit's a factor anymore? I guess it is.
Well, you know, the British government keeps saying that it still wants to fully leave the EU from after this transitional period of kind of still being affiliated to it by the end of the year, despite coronavirus. The IMF has said that's a bad idea, as others. It's a political issue. I've got no sense of where we are at the moment and whether this is just a negotiating position by the current government in the UK. Everyone is so preoccupied by COVID-19.
Yes,
it's very difficult.
Indeed.
And the British Prime Minister had coronavirus and is convalescing. So he's out of the picture at the moment, more or less.
Yes. So in 100 years from now, when Chatham House thought leaders look back at 2020, your successors and mine, do you think they'll see a global turning point for Africa or just another bad year?
Well, I would hope that this COVID-19 pandemic is like the end of the Second World War. So it's like 1945 and the creation of the United Nations and some of the global governance structures that we have. So I do disagree with people like President Trump who say the World Health Organization is useless. I think the lesson is that it could do much better and that some of these global institutions need to be built up and be more accountable and also reflective of the new world that we're in, which means much stronger African voices. Already that the head of the WHO, Dr. Tedros, is from Ethiopia, was already a positive step forward in my view.
That was great, Alex. So Alex Vines, head of Africa program at Chatham House, it's been a pleasure. And thank you for your time on the A Perspective.
Andrew,
Alex,
thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.